From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
On the way over here today, I was thinking about a patient of mine that I met recently. He's a 29-year-old young man, and I met him in the emergency room when he was in the middle of a massive heart attack. And the reason for that was that he had lost his job, and he had lost his health care coverage, and he couldn't afford the very simple blood pressure medications. So for me, today's a really important day, because when I think about patients like him, young patients, he's the kind of guy who can now get back into coverage.
A lot of people, a lot of organizations came together to pass a law, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And today is the first day in our state of Illinois, the home state of President Obama, where we're kicking off the beginning of enrollment in this very important program.
We have to reduce our number of attorneys significantly. We are allowed to continue law enforcement and law enforcement investigations. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of work that we're doing, and this is really quite disruptive and makes it quite difficult.
Basically, all visitor services will cease. The visitor center will be closed. There'll be no tours of the Lincoln home. So those normal operating services that we provide for our visitors will not be available.
That's some of the audio from this week around the state of Illinois. We heard from Governor Pat Quinn and Dr. Donald Lloyd Jones at a health insurance exchange launch early this week. Also, in terms of the federal government shutdown and its impact in Illinois, we heard U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis of the Central District of Illinois and Dale Phillips, superintendent of the Lincoln Home National Historic Site in Springfield. The rollout of Obamacare, the impact of the Fed shutdown in Illinois, and an update on pension discussions, all coming up on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Sean Crawford, WUIS News Director, Amanda Venicky, WUIS IPR State House Bureau Chief, her cohort in the state capitol, Brian Mackey, and joining us this week as a guest, Jamie Dunn, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Issues Magazine. Jamie, thanks for joining us once again.
Glad to be here, Bill.
Well, let's get started. October 1 was that magical date, both for the federal government to shut down and for the Affordable Care Act to go into effect, and they launched the health insurance exchange in Illinois. Was it launched effectively?
Well, I think that depends on who you talk to. If you speak with the Quinn administration or healthcare advocates, they will definitely tell you that the marketplace, which is basically where small businesses and those without insurance can go to purchase healthcare coverage as part of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, as it is often known, will say yes, that it is working great. They were pleased that so many people were visiting the website. Any problems with actually getting through to sign up and the technical aspects, they say, you know, we were overwhelmed. There were so many people looking at it, but it's not a problem because there is plenty of time for people to sign up. They have until December 15th in order to get coverage by January 1st, which is the first opportunity for the healthcare plans to actually go into effect. Obviously, you've talked to critics, they will say no, that already there are signs of both governments and companies not hiring as much or perhaps not giving workers as many hours because of the Affordable Care Act, that the technical problems and some potential security leaks of people's information show that there is just not the technical expertise to be able to handle all of this. So it really depends, like I said, on who you talk to, whether or not it's working.
And I had to chuckle a little bit. I heard Governor Pat Quinn using the almost exact same comment as the president, saying, well, Apple launches products sometimes and they have a few glitches. So I guess the state of Illinois health care plan is the same as an iPhone then.
Well, surely. I mean, Apple famously last year launched an upgrade of its system with a new Maps program, and people were complaining all over the internet. But I mean, this is not. I mean, Apple's even at an advantage if you want to carry this analogy to the extreme, because they test their software out with a select group of people who are programmers and things like that. I don't think Illinois really had the opportunity here. You couldn't have like a group of pilot people kind of signing up for the health insurance exchange before it actually went live. But I mean, this is not, like Amanda was saying, I don't think this is a huge setback or anything like that, or sort of a massive indictment of the program. I mean, this is, as with any big program, when it first launches, you kind of have to maybe sit back and give it a little time to work out the kinks. There were certainly, as Amanda pointed out, a lot of traffic. I mean, there's a difference between a glitch where something doesn't work and where a website is just overwhelmed with traffic. I mean, that happens when there's a big news event, for example. Sometimes a newspaper's website could be overwhelmed. I don't think that's all that's anything we saw this week was particularly surprising.
And in fact, I think it will be important to look at the rollout, where you will begin to notice how effectively and how well this is going. For example, we'll be just looking at the number of signups as it gets closer to the deadline. At least, again, that is what the Quinn administration and healthcare advocates want you to believe. They say that they're not even, in fact, beginning many of the commercials and the public relations efforts right away, because people don't sign up right now. They're looking at it, maybe doing some research, but I guess most people, journalists are not alone in being deadline driven, and therefore waiting until it gets closer to those dates where they need to have signed up. That's when we will have a better indication, I think, of the success, at least if you look at it in terms of enrollment. We're still looking at the prices, and there's a lot that goes into that that depends, for example, on your age and where you live and who all will be covered by these plans. And Illinois has said very little about it other than a preview before even the actual rollout, looking at how much the insurance coverage would cost for individuals, saying it was lower than expected. And again, a lot of people saying this is great, affordable health insurance. I know I've also seen comments from individuals that are disappointed and said, hey, I thought I could buy this for a lot less money, and I'm not pleased with the sort of coverage. Well, you'll also have to look at the networks and look at some of the prices of these. Were they less expensive because fewer doctors will actually take the plans and people will have to travel farther, for example? And that is going to be something that we'll really notice come January once people actually can begin using them.
And where are we? Go ahead, Jamie.
I think Brian makes a good point that the issues seem to be very traffic driven. Whenever I tried to get on the first day, the error messages that I was getting indicated that there was just too much traffic going to the site for it to handle all of it, which is kind of to be expected on the first day. I mean, you have to think how many journalists out there, how many academics, people in the healthcare industry just want to check it out who weren't even there to buy insurance. But the real test is going to be, as Amanda said, when we're nearing the end of the deadlines, I assume that there'll be large upsurges in traffic because people will have waited till the last minute. And will they be able to handle folks then? That's when that's going to be a major problem, if they can't handle the volume when we're meeting, you know, getting close to those deadlines when people have to be signed up to get their coverage for next year.
Well, how much of this problems, though, could have been avoided if Illinois would have taken more of a lead on this rather than letting the federal government, you know, kind of acceding that that work to the federal government? There was talk about that back in the last couple of years.
Well, so exactly, Sean. Illinois has a federal partnership, which means that they really did let the federal government handle mostly the technical aspects. Illinois could have gotten some money and would have been had the opportunity to do its own exchange that's really the online grid system where people could have looked and had some more control there. I'm not sure. Obviously, there wouldn't have been the same demands nationwide with all of the other states that either have only federal exchanges or, like Illinois, have these partnerships. But then again, I think that there are plenty of skeptics who aren't always pleased with how well state government does things. And I know there are a lot of issues in many state agencies with outdated computers and software. And so again, whereas Illinois would have received some money to help with that, it also would have been up to Illinois to have crafted this technology, this website, have its own data people and web developers. So I think you still could have seen some of the high traffic issues. No matter what, it was the first day. There was a lot of buildup for that particular day. As time goes on, that will wean some, as Jamie said, until the deadline. It is noteworthy, however, yes, that Illinois did not go the route of a state exchange, which is something that really was something that the governor had pushed for, something that there was a lot of discussion and talk about throughout the last session. And Illinois, as we heard at the top of the hour from Governor Pat Quinn, obviously Barack Obama's home state, and you talk to different people and they have various reasons for why Illinois either consciously went this route or was almost forced to go by means of the partnership. But a lot of the states that did go state exchange are seen as, you know, big supporters of Obamacare. And so it's noteworthy that Barack Obama's home state did not do that.
One question I have had, they have counselors, I think that's what they're called, that are supposed
to help navigators people. And in-person counselors, exactly.
And they are way behind in getting these people going, right?
Again,
I had heard
like
maybe
so much
there
else.
Were
this
only
is so 100? Controversial.
Okay, explain that just quickly.
So it just depends on, I think, who you speak with. There are those who say that, again, we have plenty of time, so it's not necessarily behind. October 1st was the start date. It's not the end date. So in Illinois, some could say, isn't necessarily at fault. A lot of this, again, goes back to the federal government, or perhaps on Illinois, because Illinois did go the federal partnership route. So Illinois did not actually get approval of the insurance coverage and plans that it was going to put on the exchange until October 1st. Just before then, we again saw some kind of early leaks and releases of about how much some of those plans would cost. But there wasn't any way to train people on how to coach individuals through these various plans because the federal government hadn't given approval of the plans until the date that the exchange opened. Nonetheless, there are some other, yes, training holdups. I did speak with an expert who is helping states across the country. Illinois is one of them, but about a dozen states, and said that he was impressed by the program that Illinois, in conjunction with the University of Chicago, has put forth for the individuals that they're training to help coach people looking to sign up for insurance plans they're using.
Now, yeah, I would agree with Amanda on that, as we've been covering this, not to let the state completely off the hook, but
because I think there have been issues there too, I will say, but
but there's been a lot of frustration that a lot of the decisions that needed to come down from the federal government came down at the last minute, that approval, you know, was maybe not late, but just at the very last minute possible of a lot of these things that the state had to submit and ask for approval from the federal government. So some of that definitely lies with the federal government just, I don't know, being a little slow on some of these things.
You're listening to State Week in Review. The federal government is in the midst of a partial shutdown, as they call it. Let's talk about the impact on Illinois and Illinois politics, or politics taking place in Illinois anyway. I'll throw that to the State House.
Well, a lot of the focus of the shutdown obviously has been on Washington, D.C., but there's a surprising amount of effect right here in Illinois as well. So most visibly here in Springfield, we have the Lincoln Home National Historic Site. We heard from the site superintendent at the top of the show. They, just like all the other national parks from Yosemite to the Lincoln Memorial, had to close. They have just a skeleton, National Park Police crew on around there to make sure that nothing bad happens to it. But visitors are being turned away. We heard from the U.S. attorney. He's had to furlough some of his prosecutors and the majority of his support staff. There are literally thousands of civilian employees at military bases in Illinois, Great Lakes Naval Training Station, Scott Air Force Base down by St. Louis have been furloughed. There have also been some state employees who do National Guard-related work who have been put on temporary status. And we can talk about this a little bit later, but it's also become kind of a political issue in some of our congressional campaigns here in Illinois.
Well, let's actually talk about that right now, because what political fallout for Illinois politicians or political opportunities maybe one and the same. What do we see in Illinois? I guess especially it would be in potential congressional races.
Exactly. So in some of these target races, it's expected to see a lot of blowout in the suburbs. You've seen a divide, for example, and this may become a campaign issue with which congressmen are giving up their pay and which aren't. In central Illinois, Rodney Davis is a freshman in Congress and is very much seen as a targeted seat. Therefore, he's facing a primary challenge from Erica Harold. Haven't really heard much from her on this, but already who is being seen as his strongest challenger on the Democratic side, although there are three individuals running for that party's nomination. Ann Callis, who was the chief judge in Madison County, came out right away, first day of the shutdown, saying that it showed Rodney Davis was lock and step with the Tea Party and with conservatives, and was to blame by showing poor leadership, not being willing to negotiate for this. So I very much think that we are, and on the Republican side, we're seeing a lot of blame as well, saying, you know, Democrats are the ones that are at fault. We've seen this nationally with, for example, the World War II Memorial and National Institutes of Health and what they're not being able to provide cancer clinical trials for children. All of that you see in the federal front will most definitely filter down into Illinois, and the campaigns are already stepping on that, and look for a lot of blame to be placed for any incumbent congressman, especially again those in targeted seats, for the approach and for the blame in agreeing, and also repercussions of the shutdown.
And I got to say, I think Rodney Davis is emblematic of somebody who is in kind of the awkward position here, because he's not really a Tea Party guy. I mean, he's conservative, he's a Republican, but he's not, I don't think that, you know, he decried the shutdown, as do a lot of politicians, of course. But I mean, he says he's against Obamacare, and he has voted to, you know, as many Republicans have in the House, voted to repeal it. I don't remember how many dozens of times now they voted on that. And yet, you know, he is not one of the people who is in this core small group in Washington that really kind of said, you know, that are doing the, I don't know what you want to call it, extortion, or the kind of gun to the head of, like, you have to repeal Obamacare, we're going to shut down the government. And I mean, that's basically what's happened. And, you know, I think that Davis is in a unique position where he could end up, you know, being politically damaged for something that maybe is not, you know, would have been his first choice of the way to go policy-wise.
Yeah, and it would seem Republicans have a bit of a strategy to gain some political ground in this situation that's, you know, kind of unpopular, in that they're trying to approve just pieces of the budget that are things that people really want, like cancer research and opening parks. And Democrats are, you know, not interested in doing that because that would give up their leverage to get an overall budget passed. But with all that, you know, minutia, folks may not quite understand what's going on. And it's the Republicans can then claim, well, the Democrats don't want to fund cancer research or state parks. So they do have some strategy going forward here to try to recover some political ground, maybe from folks who are upset about the shutdown.
You're listening to State Week. Just ahead, the latest on the pension discussions.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Sean Crawford, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Illinois Issues' Jamie Dunn. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, we had talk again pensions this week, because the Senate president met with the editorial board of the State Journal Register. We've also heard recently that the Republican leader in the Illinois House saying that he did not think anything would be coming up in the fall veto session, as we come upon an early fall veto session starting just a couple of weeks. So we know that it's uncertain whether there's a pension deal or that there will be a pension deal, but what are the latest things we're hearing out there in pension change land?
Well, we've known for quite some time the basic framework of what the Pension Conference Committee, these are the 10 legislators who've been working on a deal since June, what they're looking at. It's just a matter of, is that actually going to become anything? For quite some time now, we've heard it isn't soup, we're adding, we're taking away, add some sugar, take away some spice, vice versa. And this is a continuation of that. We knew for a while, again, Republicans saying we're not sure if anything that comes from this committee, they were hopeful up front, but that it's going to have the support of all 10 members of that group. And you've seen for that Senate President John Cullerton, who had a plan that was agreed upon by unions, is saying that this is less unconstitutional than the plan that had been favored by House Speaker Mike Madigan, and unions very much opposed. Unions don't like this kind of combination plan either. What you have basically is the legislature, the legislators on this conference committee trying to find a blend of the two, the Cullerton position, the Madigan position, finding something in between, kind of the Goldilocks plan. The issue being that whereas President Cullerton has been out in front and saying that he is in favor of it, we haven't really heard that from Speaker Madigan. And Republicans for sure have come forward. They had a list of at least five, they're not demands, that is too strong a word, but five considerations that they wanted, basically saying it doesn't go far enough. So in terms of, again, trying to find the Goldilocks, it's unclear if they'll ever really be able to get to that point, because Cullerton is maintaining that he wants to be kind of on the more friendlier to unions. You're seeing Republicans very much not want to be. So that's where you hear from the new House leader, Jim Durkin, saying that he doesn't think it will happen come the fall veto session. That, I think, remains to be seen. There could well be a plan put forward for a vote. Obviously, who knows if it will be success. A lot of the key to this will be Speaker Madigan and what Republicans decide to do.
Now, Jamie Dunn this week, Senate President John Cullerton, told the State Journal Register editorial board that the plan in the works right now seems to be less unconstitutional than a previous plan. Is that kind of a tip of the hat that whatever gets approved is likely, in their view, unconstitutional?
Well, yeah, there's all this debate over what they're calling consideration, that if you take away or lessen benefits for employees and or for retirees, that you have to give them something of value. Cullerton has really from the get-go stood by that idea. What I think is interesting about this plan is one of the things that they're looking for to be that consideration is to have employees give less of their pay into the system for their pension benefits. But that doesn't, you know, do anything for retirees who have already paid for their pension benefits. There's also another option for consideration that has been kicked around that came out of the University of Illinois IGPA, which would be to tie COLAs to inflation. That's something that could benefit retirees. So, you know, I don't know if they're quite there yet on something that would actually be seen as legitimate consideration for all employees and retirees as far as something of value that they would be trading for those benefits.
Or if that consideration argument would even hold up in court.
And I see Pat Quinn being able to some extent, milk this issue for a little bit into the spring if they don't do something in the fall, because he's already come out, gotten a lot of press for withholding paychecks. Of course, now those paychecks are flowing once again to lawmakers. But he was talking about doing that, and he's made this such an issue. He faces no primary opponent who says Pat Quinn can't get anything done. So really, to some extent, he could actually benefit, I think, politically if this thing dragged a little bit longer.
Then I heard this week, as Archer Daniels Midland Indicator had announced that it's looking for a new corporate headquarters to send 100 or so of its top executives out of Decatur, Illinois, and there have been talk of what incentives would the government, state government, do to keep the company in Illinois, the headquarters. I've heard somebody tying ADM benefits to the pension package, or that the governor saying he won't sign it, anything for ADM, unless there's a pension deal approved. Is this something that really is going to hold force with the legislature?
Well, the ADM deal is already, I wouldn't say a tremendously, you know, popular idea. I mean, there are several lawmakers who have some real serious concerns about it. Chief among them, the people who represent Decatur. I mean, Decatur has historically high unemployment. I think it's 3 percentage points higher. It's 12% unemployment, the last numbers I saw, compared to 9% for the rest of the state. There are people who call it generational unemployment in Decatur. I mean, this is 100 jobs. It's not the end of the world, but I mean, these are some of the top corporate jobs. Decatur is, in some ways, because of ADM's being headquartered there, a global a player in a global industry. And if you take the headquarters out, I mean, that certainly reduces the stature of that town. So lawmakers, and then there's the other issue of they're looking at moving somewhere else in Illinois. So is it really in the, some, what these lawmakers say, is it in the best interest of the state to send, you know, state tax dollars basically from to take jobs from one part of Illinois that really needs the jobs and send them to a place like Chicago where unemployment is not quite as much of a problem. But in terms of the pensions, yes, Governor Quinn says that he thinks that the pension crisis should be done first. I mean, it's not yet clear. He's never usually that specific that he, you know, says he absolutely wouldn't sign it. But, I mean, he is... It's interesting because he's done the thing where he's eliminated lawmakers' salaries, but he doesn't really have any other bills on his desk right now to hold hostage. And that's not something he did really with all any of the legislation that came to him. He pretty much acted on everything he had. But there was a question if people had, if the legislature had been able to come together on a deal to expand casinos and put a casino in Chicago, might he have held, tried to hold that back as leverage until the pensions? But then there's always a, there's a question of a deadline here. So, I mean, if he vetoes it or, you know, then the legislature can come back and override him. If he doesn't sign it, I mean, you know, he has limited actions here, but yeah, it
eventually
remains a question.
It would take effect.
Right, exactly.
In the I think where Quinn here, it's easy for him to say this because corporate tax incentives are not necessarily popular. They're very popular with the business community, obviously, that wants them. But you have had groups saying no. For instance, unions not liking this idea. They want money to stay in state government, of course, instead of being given to corporations. ADM not paying any state income taxes, it has admitted. So it's easy for Quinn to, in that regard, and I guess easy until he would get the blame perhaps if ADM does move out of state, but easy for him to take that sort of position where he hasn't had that opportunity. And again, it's not clear that this will occur or even that a vote will occur during veto session would be something like same-sex marriage, where Quinn has said that he is an advocate of that and the legislature should get going and do that. At what point does he say, no, I'm not going to sign any bill until pensions gets done? And then it's something like that that appeals to his base.
Well, and looking at it through the political lens, it's also kind of an easy dodge. He doesn't have to take a stance on it if he says, well, pensions first, then it buys him some time to see how things pan out and what people think of it without having to take a stance on it right away.
We have just about a minute for notes from the field, and so I'll give the field to Jamie Dunn to start it off.
Okay. Well, this is something that I found interesting about the government shutdown, the federal government. A lot of news or fuss has been made that members of Congress are still getting paid during the shutdown. Now, some of them have said we won't take the money. But the reason why they're getting paid is a provision in the federal constitution that's similar to Illinois' constitution that says that their pay cannot change while they're in office. And I just found that kind of interesting because that issue is being, you know, fought out here in Illinois with the veto and Governor Quinn trying to cut the pay of state lawmakers. So we see kind of a parallel between the two constitutions there.
And Sean Crawford.
Well, I'm just going to go back to the Archer Daniels Midland discussion because there has been some talk about possibly structuring some deal with the company in which they could help out that unemployment rate in Decatur. Maybe some additional hiring takes place there in exchange for some breaks, some incentives. So there's some of that talk going on as well. I don't think that Illinois wants to lose one of the biggest agribusiness companies, leaving the global headquarters and 100 jobs. They don't want to lose that. So I think something could be worked out.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues Magazine. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.